education for Wednesday, February 2nd. First, be where we start off before we have the first hearing is we are going to work House Bill 4050 will be carried over until next week. And so today we're going to have a work session on House Bill 4022, 4023, and then we're going to have public hearings on the three bills, 4002, 4031, and 4099. So, and I did that.
Yes, you did that.
Okay.
Skip ahead.
And so I am now going to open a public hearing on House Bill 4002. Representative Gallegos. Richard, would you like to read a summary of what the bill is, please?
It would be a pleasure. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 4002 directs the Department of Education to develop and implement a statewide education plan to address chronic absences of students in public schools. It declares an emergency effective on passage and has a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, thank you. Representative Gallegos, welcome.
Hello. For the record, Joseph Gallegos, House representative for House District 30, and I have my intern from Pacific University with me.
Complete.
Prohaska, and she's here for moral support only. So I'm just really excited about this bill. It is just yet another tool to help us get to 40-40-20, to school success, really focusing on outcomes with regard to enhancing the success of our students. So just if I can read some of these comments that we've put together. Research has shown that students who are chronically absent, particularly in the early years of primary education, are far more likely to drop out of high school and thus fail to earn a high school diploma. Last year, one out of six students was chronically absent from school, and those students basically missed like 10% of the school year. So I think that intervening and coming up with a plan to address this issue, I think, is really critical for our success with regard to having an educated and healthy workforce. Currently, Oregon lacks a statewide strategy to focus on how to address this growing issue. The objective of this bill is simply to create a statewide plan and identify best practices for reducing chronic absenteeism, and which has become a significant barrier to student success. The good news is that there are a number of programs out there already within our state that are doing a good job. Mm-hmm. And it's those schools we want to highlight and identify schools that are not performing to our standard and provide technical assistance to those schools. But we're going to leave that to the people to know what they're doing to come up with a plan to address these issues in the state. I do want to point out, like I said, there are a number of programs in the state that are already doing some good work. It seems to me that one of the studies that I recall from some time ago is the Coleman studies that really indicated that it was really the values of the students that was really the critical factor in success rather than even the resources of the school. So we anticipate that if we can identify then how we can address those positive values within students, I think that's what we're after. And this particular bill will provide a vehicle then for the schools to engage in some planning. So that's what the bill's about.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of Representative Gallegos? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, one question I wanted to forward here, and that is in paragraph 2 of section 1, line 6. Could you explain for me what the collaboration would look like, what you expect it would look like, with the DHS, Oregon Health Authority, and the Early Learning Division, what that relationship would look like?
Yeah, quite honestly, thank you for the question, Representative Wilson. I think that what we're after is really to identify stakeholders that would have interest and some way of contributing to sort of an overall plan for the state. So I don't think we're tied to those particular agencies, but those agencies are the ones that get named. So we're really leaving it up to the Department of Education then to really figure out who's going to be part of the stakeholder process.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions? Okay, thank you. Is she for moral support, or are you going to testify?
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. So if I could have Joel Fisher and Parasa come up, please. Can I just use your first name so I don't butcher it? Thank you. Where's Joel? He signed up and then left.
He might have just stepped out. He'll be back.
Thank you.
Hi, good afternoon, Chair Doherty and members of the House Education Committee. For the record, my name is Parasa Chanrami, speaking on behalf of Stand for Children. We're here to speak in support of House Bill 4002 because it creates a statewide system of supports to reduce chronic absenteeism. And we really appreciate all of the stakeholders that would be involved in the collaboration process, everyone from the Oregon Department of Ed, Health Authority, Human Services, Early Learning, as well as community and education stakeholders. The other piece we really appreciate about the bill is that it'll build on evidence-based practices in improving student attendance. And as Representative Gallegos mentioned earlier, 1 in 6 students were chronically absent last year. That's over 93,000 students who were chronically absent last year. And we know that the more time students miss and aren't in school, the less likely they are to be successful and graduate on time. And just to give you a snapshot of what some of the data looks like, so in math, 46% of students who are chronically absent actually met the standards. And for reading, only 62% of students who are chronically absent met the standards. For high school graduation, only 3 in 4 students who are chronically absent graduated on time. As a state, we know that we can do more, and we feel that House Bill 4002 will be an important part of that work. And one small recommendation that we'd make to the bill is to push back the reporting deadline to an earlier deadline from December 1st, 2016 to September 1st, 2016. That way, lawmakers and all of the stakeholders involved have an opportunity to review the report and also provide some feedback and work on any legislative concepts as needed for the 2017 session. And with that, appreciate your time. Thank you again.
Okay, thank you. Do you have any questions of her? And then we'll hear from Mr. Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What's the definition of chronically absent?
So, great. Thank you for the question. Representative Springer. So the definition of chronically absent is students whose attendance rates are below 90%.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any other questions? Okay.
Not for her.
Okay. Mr. Fisher.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joel Fisher on behalf of Oregon Business Association. We're a statewide association representing over 300 businesses across Oregon, both big and small. Just wanted to demonstrate for you today what it looks like to almost be absent.
See? But not chronically.
But not quite. So Process has done a great job of kind of framing up the issue. This is an issue that I think everybody understands fairly well. Chronic absenteeism directly tied to student performance, tied to graduation rates, which have been inching up, but it takes multiple measures to get towards moving up our graduation rate, getting to 40-40-20. So we're supportive of this bill, supportive of doing something about our chronic absenteeism problem, because we are definitely higher than a lot of states around the nation, and we would urge your support of this bill. Thank you for your consideration.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of the panel? Representative Frederick.
Yes, thank you. I apologize for being late, too. So, but
it was duly noted.
Yes, I noticed that. I'm sure I saw you mark it down there. Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to speak to two things that I would like to make sure that it's included in the discussion. One is make sure that we're talking with students, not deciding by way of adults what we think would have brought us back to school or kept us in school. We really need to make sure that the students are part of the discussion, an integral part of the discussion. And secondly, I want to make sure that we speak to it in a different way. When I worked with the Portland schools, we had a great deal of effort dealing with absenteeism. And I won't go into the whole length of that. But one of the concerns that we had was that there was a big push to find some way to punish people, with the idea that if you punish folks enough, somehow they're going to want to come to school. that doesn't make any sense to me. And I want to make sure that we don't try to go down the line of we're going to fine the parents or we're going to do some sort of punishment. It does not work. We've tried it. We've got to find another way to approach it. I would suggest that the approach be trying to make sure that, kids want to be in school and not just trying to find the most punitive approach that we can take. So as we look at these issues, I would ask that we not either try to punish the kids, the teachers, the school, the district, but find a way to make sure that we're getting parents, getting kids who want to be in the classroom. So thank you.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Okay. Thank you very much. Those are the last people we had signed up. Is there anyone else that would like to speak on this issue, on this bill? Okay, we did have one on OLIS, another letter of support from Chalkboard Project, and that is in also in the OLIS system. Okay, so with that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 4002, and I will actually open a public hearing on House Bill 4031, which I am participating in. So, okay. Richard, if you could read what the bill is, please.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 4031 directs the Chief Education Office to design and implement a pilot program to decrease rates of school absenteeism. It sunsets the pilot program January 2nd, 2020. It appropriates money from the general fund for the purpose of the pilot program, declares an emergency effective on passage, and contains a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you very much, House Education Committee, Vice Chair Frederick, Vice Chair Springer, and the rest of the committee. For the record, I'm Margaret Doherty. I'm the House of Representatives members from House District 35, which includes Tigard and Southwest Portland. This bill is something that's very important, and I'm just going to give a little introduction, and it ties into what we're trying to do and how we're dealing with chronic absenteeism. Decades ago, we had a program which I think was the best program we ever had in the Oregon schools, and those were child development specialists, trained social workers that were in every elementary school and every middle school in the state of Oregon. And so they could deal with some of the chronic issues, especially and problems, especially with kindergartners, first graders, and second graders, and third graders. So what this bill is a pilot project to bring something like this back, to go through and hire trained professionals, whether they be social workers or whether they be mental health specialists or whatever, to go through and deal with some of the issues that some of the younger children are facing. Because I think we all know in education, if you start out and you can deal with issues and you deal with school things, that chronic absenteeism will be something, hopefully something of the past. And so that's the whole purpose. And I think by example, to talk about some of the issues, I was in elementary school about a month or so ago, and in October, and there was a little boy in second grade, and nice little kid, but was acting out in class, in a second grade class. And it was not like he was acting out in a violent way, which some of the children are, but he just couldn't stay in class. And he would bolt, and he would go to the principal's office, and he would do whatever, so it was very hard to keep him in school. And so there were issues that he had that we had to deal with. And what the issues were is when this young man was in first grade, he was pulled out of the home because of domestic abuse. And as he was on the phone in the principal's office, and the principal was there, he said, Mommy, I hope Daddy didn't leave bruises on you like last time. And so these are the sort of issues that teachers are not prepared to deal with and to get help and so on and so forth. And this is kind of what the idea is we, if we can go through and solve problems early enough, hopefully we won't have problems down the road. So that is what the bill is. I'm going to be going back up on the dais. If you have any questions, I'll take them. If not, I'll turn it over. Whoever wants to be in charge.
Thank you, Vice Chair. I do have a few questions. Love this concept. I just am trying to kind of wrap the pieces of it around my head.
Because what I may ask you to do is when Mr. Riggs is back up here,
okay.
They're more intimate with the bill.
And you want me to wait?
Those are the sort of questions that...
Because mine are more technical to how this is going
to
work.
We could defer it to
you. I'll wait.
I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Weird.
Thank you. Could you kind of explain the connection between these two bills that we're looking at today?
You know, I think these are the two bills that actually Representative Gallegos and I worked on them separately without knowing what it is, but I think the concept of both bills are very, very similar. The outcome and the goal is, you know, healthier students, students that are in class and helping with the chronic absenteeism. And we all know, I mean, without having all of these groups brought together, that it starts at a very young age. And so ours is more dealing with just specifically young age children, where Representative Gallegos is looking, let's get all of the best practices together so we can work on them. And that's kind of the same. So they're very similar. Ours is more specific with the pilot program, and that's why it's going to Ways and Means, where his is more, let's get all of the best practices that we have in the state and continue to use those.
So you're piloting one of the best practices that you found.
It could be, yes.
Okay.
But that's what we're doing.
Thank you.
So.
Anyone else? No?
Okay.
Why don't
Thank
you join
much.
Us back up here?
Okay, are you guys ready?
There we go.
Thank you, Chair Doherty and members of the committee. My name is Maureen Hinman, and I'm the policy director for the Oregon School-Based Health Alliance. In order to talk about HB 4031, we need to talk for a moment about adverse childhood experiences or trauma, which includes things like neglect, abuse, household dysfunction, or trauma stemming from poverty or racial or gender discrimination. Exposure to trauma actually changes the way that the brain functions. And so children exposed to trauma have a harder time learning, and they respond to changes differently than other students might. So they are more likely to potentially get in trouble or be diagnosed with something like ADHD. This directly impacts student achievement. Children who have an ACE score of 3 out of 10 are twice as likely to be suspended and 5 times more likely to have severe attendance issues. Data from Oregon Healthy Teens and other sources demonstrates that many Oregon students are experiencing trauma. But the good news is that positive experiences help build resilience, and that trauma-informed schools create a safe environment that allows children to reset their brains and focus on learning. We would like Oregon to join a handful of states in piloting the development of trauma-informed schools. A trauma-informed school realizes the impact of trauma and incorporates that knowledge into policies, procedures, and practices. This is more than an intervention. Trauma-informed schools offer tiered supports for students along a continuum from prevention to resiliency building to intervention, so that all students have access to the protective factors that they need to thrive. So key components of the bill, this is a 3-year pilot program. We will be using existing trauma-informed models that are tailored to communities in Oregon, specifically depending on what their existing resources, assets, and gaps are. It will be coordinating within the school as well as outside of the school with CCOs, public health, and other local entities that may be able to offer resources to the school. It will include either a school-based health center or an equivalent school-based system for providing behavioral health services and care coordination, so that intervention is available in the school. And it will require a minimum community match for each project and pursuit of federal funding. So we know that in ESSA Section 4108, it includes grants to support schools that include trauma-informed practices, and we expect that money to be available in 1 to 2 years, and we feel that this pilot can really set Oregon up to receive federal funds. Schools that have implemented trauma-informed strategies have shown amazing results. So I urge you to refer House Bill 4031 to Ways and Means. Oregon schools and Oregon kids are ready to move beyond talk about ACEs into action. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'll be brief. We spoke to you in January and gave you a lot of the details about the process. This is Doug Riggs, by the way, Oregon Alliance of Children's Programs, School-Based Health Network, and the Alliance for Kids. And I really do want to emphasize that this proposal was put together with the input of dozens and dozens of parents, teachers, students, health programs, Oregon Youth Authority participation, DHS, Department of Education. This is an 18-month process to get us to this point where we have this bill. And so it really has been very collaborative. I do want to say that there is one amendment that we have been working on with the Oregon Education Association that we've agreed to clarify to make sure that we want to make sure that the bill and the pilot projects take advantage of not only of schools that have student school-based health centers, but also that have other resources such as school nurses, school and clinical psychologists, and school counselors. And we want to make that very clear. So we have an amendment that we'll talk about at Ways and Means to incorporate that if the bill gets sent down there. But clearly, the way that this process works is only through a collaborative process at the school district level. Mm-hmm. So this is not something that would be top-down. It would be bottom-up. It would be an RFP process where school districts would sit down with their key resources and people in their community and put together a proposal. And the last thing I want to emphasize is that what has changed between the time that we came to you in January and today is that President Obama has signed into law the Every Student Succeeds Act, which is passed on a bipartisan basis through Congress, and includes Section 4108, which specifically sets up a grant program for states that are pursuing trauma-informed care. So I would love to see Oregon be at the front of the line to be able to have school districts apply for this funding, and this is what this bill would set up. Last thing I want to do before we turn it over to the expert here, which is our student from Tigard High School, where my kids go to school. The last thing I want to say is that this program is complementary to the bill that Representative Gallegos has. And he and I have spoken about this several times this week. We both were working on bills concurrently. We weren't aware until the pre-session filings that these bills were both moving ahead. But I think what our bill would do is give the Department of Education and that process some hard evidence on what school districts want to pursue, because not every district will be the same. And the second thing is hopefully we'll give them some evidence on what works. So what we're really trying to do is pilot in a handful of school districts, you know, various evidence-based practices, see how they tailor fit with a community. I mean, you know, a community in eastern Oregon will not be the same as a community in downtown Portland or the same as something on the coast. Salem won't be the same as Medford, as an example. And so this needs to be set up to respond to the communities. And so I think that passage of this bill and implementation of these pilots will give the results that Representative Gallegos wants to see an awful lot more legitimacy down the road. So I think they're complementary, and we would urge that both be passed. So thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Haley?
Hello, my name is Haley Williams. I am a former student of Tigard High School representing the State Youth Action Council, and I'm here for supporting our bill 4031. So it was right in the middle of my high school career when my mom got the news that she'd been laid off. And as a single parent raising me, that posed a lot of challenges for us. And we weren't unlike hundreds of thousands of Americans at the time who were going through the same thing. And so my mom decided to reapply herself, and she actually got a scholarship at a local university. But the condition was she had to be a full-time student. Now, how she juggled that, working on jobs and raising me, I don't know how she did it, but she did. And her being laid off, we kind of dipped below the poverty line. And for me, it wasn't about not being able to afford new Nikes or not being able to go to the school dances and buying school dresses. For me, it was how I felt. And I felt a sense of hopelessness. And it was like standing in front of our house and watching every brick and every window just crumble and fall to dust in front of us. And while I was enduring the struggle, I experienced a decline in my enthusiasm to go to class, to be with my friends, to be in the present moment, because everything was falling apart at home at hyperspeed. And the hardest part for me was that my grade point average dropped, and for the first time it was below 4.0. And throughout this experience, three teachers really stood out to me: Mrs. Baker, Mrs. Montgomery, and Mrs. Duncan, and it was they who noticed that I was struggling at school academically. And they approached me asking me not to get my notes in and study for the next test. They approached me and asked me, "Hey, Haley, we haven't seen you in class. Where have you been? We miss you. Are you okay? Is everything okay at home?" And it blew my mind that someone noticed that I was gone, that, hey, Haley's not in class. And for me, it was then that I realized that my outside life was impacting my school life. And I hadn't made the connection between the two myself until my teachers asked me personally, "Hey, how are you?" And so looking back, there are many things that I wish I could change about the way I responded to my situation. I wish I'd known that the hard times wouldn't last forever and that I could make it through and still be a good teacher, or a good student, sorry. And but what I wouldn't change is the wonderful teachers I had, and it was they that reminded me that I could be a good student, that I can still go to class and get the good grades that I know I can. And it was they who stayed after class and helped me catch up even well before, like, the final exam or before the final test. And I didn't know teachers could do that. And it was they that helped me become the leader that I am today. And I urge you to support this bill, because without it, Mrs. Duncan, Mrs. Baker, and Mrs. Montgomery may not have, like, given me the help that I needed. They wouldn't have been inspired to do so. And something I think that all of us should remember is what happens outside of the classroom is actually something that is carried on the weight of the students inside it. And I want other students to get the help that I did and be able to say I had a wonderful teacher who cared about me as a person, not just as a student who came into the class and sat down and listened to them lecture. And so helping school staff and teachers better understand the effects of trauma can make all the difference for the students.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any questions to this panel? Representative Springer.
excuse me. Thank you, Madam Chair. Probably for you, Doug, this question. By the way, great testimony. I bet your mom's proud of you. So as I look at this bill and then at 4002, I'm wondering if they work in tandem as well as they possibly could, or if maybe the study comes first. And I'll tell you what I'm thinking about. These are pilot projects for 3 years. The 402 is pilot projects for 3 years. No. This bill is
pilot projects.
For pilot project for 3 years. And 402 talks about a report of best practices to come December 31st this year. And this bill talks a lot about the best practices also. So I think they're both good ideas. I'm thinking, is there an effective and efficient way to either combine or one wait and move forward on the other? Does that make sense? Because these get to the same goal. They take different paths.
Right.
And I don't know that both paths are going to be the right path.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Springer, Vice Chair Springer. I think that's a really good question, and that's something that I've talked to the Chair and Representative Gallegos about. The urgency, I think, in passing 4031 right now is to make sure that we're at the front of the line to take advantage of what is a national recognition of the impact of trauma on kids and the importance of bringing trauma-informed care and connectivity between what's happening in the school and outside the school to bear. And I think Oregon can really be a leader on this point in Oregon school districts, not just Oregon generically, but school districts in Oregon individually. The other thing is, I think that if the feds come up with a set of guidelines, which we expect them to do later this spring, and school districts put their thinking caps on and develop ideas by the fall to be able to apply for the federal grants, all that information I see feeding into what the Department of Education is asked to be able to do underneath Representative Gallegos' bill. So I think the timing is actually very good. And then the other thing is getting pilots on the ground in school districts allows us to be that much further ahead, because obviously the pilot projects will not cover every school, every district in the state. It covers a handful, depending on how the department decides to go ahead with the funding. So I'd like to get kind of a quick start on this, so when we come back maybe in 2019, the department will have some actual evidence to be able to say, we believe that we ought to invest in these five, you know, best practices, and here's how we do it. I worry if we wait to do pilot projects, we'll theoretically have an idea what school districts might want to do, but we won't have actual proposals from, you know, the rural areas, urban areas around the state to know exactly. Because I know what I would like to do. I mean, if you gave me a magic wand, I'd write an application. Maureen would write a different application, and Haley would probably write a third application. But I'd, you know, we have education representatives in the back of the room, and they deal with school districts and schools and teachers every day. And I think the beauty of what we're proposing is we're going to hear from them in the field what works best, not just people on Salem.
Follow up. Thank you. Follow up.
Thank you. That helps. I didn't see, maybe I missed it in the bill, how many pilot projects. And it sounds like there's a couple, multiple criteria here to meet. And it looks like there's a general fund ask of $5.75 million. And as I read the rest of the bill, it sounds like, I don't know if that's a 50-50 match. It talked about money from the community and then this. And if the chair will give me one more follow-up, I'll let you answer that. Otherwise, I'm going to tag this other question in there, too.
Sure.
How about this, then we'll have a follow-up.
I'd be happy to answer that. Maureen could go into great detail because we've actually tried to scope out and with, you know, draft budgets how this would work and how the money would be spent. And so I think that it's... My feeling is it's premature to say exactly how many or exactly what the number ought to be. I think the Ways and Means Committee will decide we have X amount of money and we can provide that. The benefit of what's happened at the federal level is we might not need $5.75 million to do everything that we'd like to do, and we might be able to get a large portion of that amount in federal dollars. So if we came up with two-thirds or a half of that, we might be able to do just as much. And the community match, I think, really depends on the community. You know, there are some CCOs, I think, for instance, which might be interested in helping with the match in urban areas, and we've talked to a number of people in the health industry who might be interested. In small rural communities, the ability to provide a large match might be very different. So I didn't want, and I don't think Maureen and I wanted to say it's a one-size-fits-all, because a smaller school district with very important needs might come up and say, we can only provide a 10% match. But we have great ideas. I'd love to be able to fund that. And okay. So we want to leave the flexibility on that point.
Okay. One more, Madam Chair. Thank you. So that's just not been established yet, basically.
Correct.
Matching.
Yes.
And that makes sense. What's great is, unfortunately, we have a problem, but the good news is we've got some multiple angles here to attack this problem, and that's great. I don't know if it's one or the other or a combination or what. Of course, my rural Oregon radar has jumped up. When I read in the middle of the first page here, a school district have a school-based health center. Mm-hmm. My five school districts, I don't believe, do unless it's really low-key. Mm-hmm. So they wouldn't qualify under that criteria. Or a school-based system for providing behavioral health services and care coordination. Mm-hmm. I don't have a clue what that means. So my concern is this is going to be an urban Oregon thing, not a rural Oregon thing.
Now, let me, Madam Chair, Representative Vice Chair Springer, let me just answer it quickly, and Maureen can go into the details. School-based health centers are dispersed pretty much equally across the state. There are a lot of rural health centers, and there's a lot of interest in school-based health centers in rural Oregon as well. And part of the reason is because they are developed at the school level. The school district has to approve them, and so everyone has a slightly different flavor. The second part, I think, is important because we did recognize in the discussions over the last few months that not every school has a school-based health center. But a key to the evidence and the research that we've had presented to us is that a large part of dealing with trauma is having mental and behavioral health capacity. And so we don't define exactly what that capacity will be, but I think lots of school districts can make a very good case that they have either in the school or with a health clinic directly, an FQHC or something like that. I think a lot of school districts could demonstrate that they can provide that kind of mental behavioral health support. So we were trying to be, with those two separate lines that you referenced, we were trying to be very flexible. So it's not a one-size-fits-all. And certainly, I think if you have seven pilots and they're all in Multnomah County, you don't get a lot out of the pilot project. I don't think that the chief education office would want to do that. I think if you have seven or eight and they're dispersed throughout the state, then you get a very good variety, and that's certainly what I would want to see. I grew up in Redmond, so I like to see...
That's bigger than any of my towns.
Yeah. It didn't used to be. When I was there, it was 2,300 people.
Bigger than any of mine.
Yeah. So rural Oregon is very important to me and to the Alliance as well.
Thank you.
I love you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Vice Chair Springer. I wanted to mention some examples of what might work. One of the things we are going to suggest is the amendment that specifies that school nurses, counselors, and psychologists could be a part of that. But also there are examples of, like in Eastern Oregon, Gobi, one of the CCOs right now, is funding social workers in a number of schools. They're working on developing that in Umatilla County and Wallowa County. And then on my last slide, I was talking about, I didn't talk about it because of time, but there's a 7-district trauma-informed strategic planning process that's been happening among districts as they're trying to figure out how to do this. And so that includes districts from all over the state, Tillamook, Umatilla, North Wasco, Phoenix Talent, Gladstone. So it's definitely not just an urban desire or phenomenon. And I think schools have been thinking about it, and now they need some help implementing with the bill.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hack?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So Representative Springer asked several of my questions, but I do still have a few, and thank you so much for bringing this, and thank you for your testimony. Again, I agree, your mom must be very proud of you. One of the things I did want to say that I think is key in this, everything that she talked about was her teacher's involvement. Mm-hmm. So my concern would be, if you're looking at school-based health centers or health centers, you mentioned coordinated care organizations, public health entities, or a nonprofit organization. I think that listening to her, which is so important, these are the folks, this is your stakeholder right here. And if you pull out away from that and you don't focus on what's happening in the school and find a way to bring these folks into the school to have the partnership with the teachers to work with the kids, mm-hmm. I believe you're doing a disservice to them. While I agree this is a pilot program, and I would certainly hope that you would pilot that in a way that would look at all different avenues, but I certainly would hope that you would definitely look at a model that would keep this inside of a school, that would work hand in hand with teachers, that would provide the old saying of the wraparound service to our students with the teachers. Mm-hmm. They have the boots on the ground. They know our kids. So I, too, am concerned about the whole care, pulling it out and having it in an organization outside of the school. So I'm happy. I'm glad that there's going to be some sort of an amendment that would address that. Mm-hmm. It does talk about at least five applicants. And it says they're going to do that by rule. I would like it to say at least five applicants that represent the entire statewide. While I also understand you don't want to limit yourselves and say, well, you have to have one in a rural community, and you get 10 applications from rural communities, and they're all really bad. I get that. We want quality applications. You want pilot programs that are going to actually go out and do the work. So I wouldn't want to see your hands tied in that regard, but I do think it's important that the smaller rural communities, they don't have health centers. I mean, they're lucky to have a nurse, maybe one day a week. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important to see all those. I was curious. I have one last question. I'm done. What nonprofit are you looking at? You mentioned that they'll be working with the health authority and ODE. There's a nonprofit group that will have a large say in the outcomes of this and will also work hand in hand with school districts. Do you have one in mind? What's your process going to be with that? And if so, what best practice with these folks? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Madam Chair, Representative Hack, let's go backwards on those so I don't forget, and I'll probably forget the first question by the time we get to it. But on the last element, one of the things that the work groups and the alliance felt very strongly about is that someone needed to help collect the data, provide information. So, I mean, there's a ton of information. If you go to the website that we have, there's a lot of information. Lots of research has been done. So we don't want school staff to replicate the research that has already taken place. So having someone who can provide that research, suggest possible ideas, or work with and respond to questions from school districts is important. I love the Department of Education. I think there are some wonderful people in the Department of Education, but the feeling among the work groups is that we wanted to make sure that someone was kind of quick on their feet to be able to respond to these types of things and collect the data and compile the data into a report, because whatever you fund, we want to come back and we want to say it worked, it didn't work, here's the best practice. And so what the work groups in the Alliance determined is take an existing organization that might have done that. Now, the School-Based Health Alliance is one. Maureen, I won't ask Maureen to say how wonderful they are, but they have done this working with the RACs and the Chief Education Office and other areas as well. So they have that experience. And so they could make sure that the school resources were being spent on the kids and the educators and the students in the classrooms and in the school rather than the administrative efforts. So that would be the answer to that one. But it's not spelled out in the bill. So it would be open for the Chief Education Office to determine who that would be. The second thing on the teachers, and I'm really glad you asked that, and Maureen may want to address this. A large part of trauma-informed care, and I think Haley spoke to this so eloquently, is the ability of teachers to be aware of trauma-informed care and the principles behind it and dealing with kids who've had obstacles or barriers or challenges in their lives. You know, for a long time in this state, what we've done is we've said we're going to suspend you or we're going to kick you out of school. And, you can't blame – teachers have a lot on their plates, but there's an awful lot of evidence that shows that if you work with teachers and educators in the classroom and you work on classroom development, that you can train and educate and bring teachers up to speed on how to deal with these challenges that kids face. And I think that's what Haley ran into. She ran into three teachers who understood, recognized the symptoms, and were able to act. So a large part of this pilot project would be just that. So although we talk about health, we talk about incorporating with CCOs and other groups, a large part of what we expect this will be in trauma-informed care is involving the teachers, involving the counselors, involving the administrators to try to make sure that we're working together on this and not, it won't be separate. So that's a really good point on the teachers. And I'll let Maureen answer your question.
I just have a follow-up to that. So you say working with counselors, working with behavioral specialists, working with teachers. Are you at all concerned about the fact that we don't have counselors in a lot of our schools, we don't have behavioral specialists in a lot of schools, and if that is a concern of yours, will you then gear who you'd give the pilot projects to? Will schools that have behavioral specialists and counselors be given priority over schools that don't? Because I believe there's more trauma in schools that don't than do, and that would be a huge concern to me.
So, Chair Doherty, Representative Hack. So I just want to clarify a few things. So the money would not be going to the school-based health center. The money would be going either to the school district or potentially to an ESD. And part of that is because it mentions in the bill, it specifies that a large part of this is actually professional development that takes place in the school of all the teachers, because it's not just an intervention. So the SBHC is primarily an intervention. They have mental health or the other mental health person or entity is an intervention, but there is a huge part of this that is resiliency building and also just recognition, understanding and recognition of how trauma actually impacts the brain and the way a child learns and how you can change some of that in the ways that interactions occur and through some of the processes that happen at the school, like disciplinary processes. So the intervention is just one piece. The reason that we wanted mental health available during the pilot is because it is a pilot, and I feel like schools would spend a majority of the time developing the intervention system and not focusing on the professional development and resiliency building if they were starting with zero mental health. And that we can actually get more learnings from a pilot if they're not spending the whole time creating just the intervention piece.
Yeah. And if I could just add a comment to this, as part of it is like with Haley's situation, teachers, I mean, we knew right away when there was a problem with a child, right away. And it was usually 9 times out of 10 something that dealt with the home. But we didn't necessarily have the resources of where to ask to get help, or if it was more severe, where to send them. And that's the whole kind of idea around this project. And, you know, maybe 5 years down the line, we could have specialists in all of the buildings to be able to help students. But that was the idea of the teachers usually recognize it, but it's then where do we go from here? And if I have a trauma specialist that I can go to and say, Haley's having problems, we think it's this, can you help her, kind of thing. And so that's, in a nutshell, kind of what the idea of the project is. And remember in September, or this was after last session, where I had that article in the Seattle Times on trauma kids? Mm-hmm. That's kind of what this program is, and so it builds from that. So how about, actually I have Representative Wilson, Reardon, then McLean. Are you finished? I'm sorry.
Thanks. Okay. Thank you.
Wilson, Reardon, McLean.
Representative Hack took my questions.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Representative Reardon.
So bear with me just a little bit, please, and thank you. I really support, believe in what you're doing. I understand all of this is extremely important. It sounds like a fantastic program. I'm still hung up on the idea of, you know, we're going to be probably doing a study that would be completed by next December. And during that study, they'll probably be, I would assume, looking at any number of different wonderful programs. And so we might hear about lots of those. And I could just imagine that at some point we'd want to do a pilot on one or two of those programs. So I'm not sure why we're supporting. I'm old-fashioned. I still think $5.8 million is a lot of money. So why are we advancing this one and not just waiting until next year? Everybody else knows the answer. I apologize.
I think it's a very good question, and I'm happy to answer it. I think the most, I was on the Washington County Commission on Children for 13 years. I was the co-chair for the last 5 years. I've watched a decade of us disinvesting in adolescent programs. And that's what's happened in the state. Programs funded by the commissions at one point through the state were about $80.6 million. By the time the commission system was dismantled in 2012, it was down to $32.4 million. And then very little of that money's left. I think the Early Learning Council gets $16 or $18 or $22 million, but a lot of the other money is evaporated. And so I really view this as an opportunity to kind of move ahead with reinvesting in school age and adolescent kids. And I guess my most important point is there's an opportunity that has been presented to us to be at the front of the line for federal funding. So that $5.75 million may not be $5.75 million. It might be less. We don't know quite yet what the federal program is going to be. But, you know, Oregon in some cases has been a leader on certain issues. I think that there's some urgency in getting the bill teed up down to Ways and Means for them to consider if there's money available, how much money would be available to get projects like this on the ground in districts. The other thing is, the longer we wait, the less likely it is that we'll be ready to come back in 2019. And 2019 is important because we're about to tee up a study on school nurses and school nurse ratios and school health in general. We're very supportive of that, and we've always been supportive of additional nurses, counselors, psychologists. We continue to be. So this lines up nicely with the work that's going on in that work group as well to come back in 2019 and say, overall, what is the best way to reduce chronic absenteeism and improve graduation? So I think there are a lot of reasons. I really feel, you know, if we wait 3 more years or 4 more years or 5 more years, my youngest daughter is a sophomore in high school, so she'll be out of high school. But what about, you know, her friends in 6th and 7th and 8th grade and 4th and 5th grade? So I think there's a lot of research that has been done. Representative Doherty mentioned the article in the Seattle Times. We had Christopher Blodgett, who's behind that project, coming in. I think some of these are ready to be tested out on the ground, and so that's what we're hoping, is we can test them out on the ground. At the same time, the state needs to come back with larger recommendations on how do we reduce our absentee rate and our graduation rates and improve the graduation rates. And I think these things can help us get there. So I think the timing is actually, with the federal grant process, with what's happening in Oregon with analysis, I think the timing is good for something like this to be jump-started.
Thank you, Representative McLean.
Well, my question's a little bit different after that answer there. First of all, I want to say I'm looking at both of them seriously as being complementary and not one and two. It's not step one, step two. We need a lot of different tools in our toolbox to deal with absenteeism. Absenteeism is where we're losing kids because you can't teach them if they're not in the schools, and so we need to look for as many tools as possible to be able to deal with this very real problem. And so that's where I'm starting my conversation with you. I personally really like the idea of partnerships, and I really personally like the idea of trying to make sure that partnerships and good goals come with as much possibility for resources. And so I really am interested in this program because of the ability to be able to really look at some of that dollar amount that could come from the federal government and make sure that we're there ready to start programs that we know have value. So that's where I'm starting. When you look at psychologists, and so this is the question, when you look at psychologists and you look at counselors and you look at those other support folks, you're not talking about they have to be necessarily district employees. They could be a combination employee between a county and an ESD and a school. And my example is the alcohol and drug counselors that we get from Washington County in some of our schools in Hillsborough, where those folks are basically employees either of one, both, or, you know, so they could be school, they could be county, they can be both. And those opportunities have changed and been different over the years. But with a program like this, you'd have school districts, I think, you know, trying to get some other supportive partners to be able to come in with program ideas or curriculum or professional development and, you know, would be supportive there. So I want to make sure that the bill says, and this is the question, that it can be any kind of a partnership counselor, a school counselor, a, you know, someone that's working with a county or an ESD, and you would still consider them for one of these grants or one of these pilot programs. And I think I heard you say that before, but I want to make sure the words are there to support that.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative McLean, yes, okay. Absolutely. In fact, we've been dealing with the Oregon Education Association and developing an amendment that would do just that. And we believe that it was kind of inherent in the bill as written, but we are certainly going to clarify that at the next stop.
I think Absolutely. That's really important to answer the other representative's thoughts
right.
there.
I agree.
Okay, Representative Springer. Thank you, Madam Chair, again. One very simple point here, the $5.75 million ask, which could, down in Ways and Means, end up being anything under the sun. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that is for the biennium, but it's a three-year project, so I'm thinking then we'll need to come back for another ask, or is that a three-year ask? And then the last part is I'm sitting here, I'm thinking of my biggest school out of my five districts. There's about 1,300 students in the school. It's a high school. It varies between three and four counselors, and they each have 200 to 300 students each, and they're academic counselors. They will tell you they are academic counselors. I don't know that my son ever saw his counselor, which is fine, but, you know, as far as scheduling needs, unless something has changed, there's one nurse for eight buildings, and occasionally you would see her. And I knew the folks really well, and I didn't know her. And she was really more compliance. Let's make sure we're doing things right, which is very legitimate. I'm trying to think in my biggest, most equipped school, how they could apply and get any help here.
Well, I assume your biggest school is Lebanon High School. Is that right?
Pardon?
Is biggest school Lebanon? Which
yeah.
is the biggest high school? Okay. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if this would be possible, Representative Springer and Madam Chair, but I do know that your CCO in your district is very interested in youth health. Samaritan Health Services is very involved in the CCO, and I know that the executive director of the CCO has been very eloquent about wraparound services and bringing mental health services and behavioral health services to all of the members of the CCO.
Are you talking about Larry Mullins?
I'm talking about Kelly and Kim.
Okay.
Right. So I've chatted with them both with IHN, your CCO down there.
Okay.
And so I would anticipate that, you know, they're going to be, and we've already talked to some CCOs. I haven't talked to IHN about this. But I think there are lots of groups in the state that would be excited about this possibility and recognize that a school district doesn't have enough resources and needs to step in. And that's why we have a local match. We can't, you know, far too often with chronic absenteeism graduation rates, we blame the school and we blame the teacher. So we're saying, oh, graduation rates are falling. It's the teacher's problem. It's not the teacher's problem. It's not the counselor's problem. My kids were at Tigard High School with Haley. I used to ask my daughter, you know, if you're upset, go see a counselor. They don't have any time. So clearly, counselors, nurses, psychologists, all are in short supply. Yeah. And so I think part of our goal here is to figure out what are those elements for the kids who are really, really struggling in school, or the kids like Haley who said, you know, might not attend class. What are the elements that they need? So that isn't just a school issue. It's a partnership with the CCO. It's a partnership with the federal government. It's a partnership with the state. I also represent nonprofits. So there are several nonprofits down in the Lynn, Benton County area that deal with kids who are high-risk kids. I would see them being very interested because the kids who aren't in school are probably in their programs. And all of my nonprofits would love to get those kids back in school. So partnerships between those nonprofits and the school district, I think, would
everything
be
everything, tribal councils, everything else.
Yeah,
so, yeah,
exactly. So I think you're hitting the nail on the head. It's there aren't enough resources. There aren't enough school nurses. We, as I mentioned, we authored the school nurse bill how many years ago?
2009
that requires a certain number of school nurses per. We haven't reached the ratio. So we supported the ONA's bill to take another look at the school nurse ratio, and we think that's very important. It's not just school-based health centers. It's school health in general. It's counseling, school health. I mean, all these things lead to the point that we have low graduation rates, and that's really what we're trying to get at, is how do you, from a district level, come up with the best ideas to address those issues?
Thank you.
So I hope that's helpful.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much.
You.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. That's all we have signed up? Okay. Anybody else want to speak on this? Okay. If not, I close the public hearing on House Bill 4031 and open up a public hearing on House Bill 4099.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of
the
committee.
Thank you for leading him.
House Bill 4099 delays the requirement that school districts must implement a child sexual abuse prevention instructional program for students in kindergarten through grade 12 until July 1, 2017. Delay of 1 year. It directs the Department of Ed to conduct a study and implementation of that requirement and to report to the interim legislative committees no later than February 1 of 2017. It declares an emergency effective on passage.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Leininger.
Thank you, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. I'm Ann Leininger. I represent House District 38 in the state legislature, and we are here to support the smooth implementation of a really important bill by making some adjustments and allowing the department educators to plan a little bit more about how it's implemented. Last session, the legislature passed with strong bipartisan support an important bill about helping us protect our kids from child sexual abuse by raising awareness so that kids are in a position to recognize dangerous situations and help them avoid and help families avoid dangerous situations and respond well to them. But we heard from a couple of superintendents when we had our Multnomah County superintendents meeting that there was some concern about how we were going to implement it and the sort of frequency of the trainings and whether we needed to take some time to think through how to implement it in a way that would work well for school districts. All of us strongly supporting the goal of the work. And so we are here today, and I'll turn it over to my co-chief sponsor, Representative Johnson, to support the rollout in a way that works well for our school districts.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. For the record, Mark Johnson from House District 52. And for the record, can you have a copy of the bill, actually? This is the old. Do you have the new one?
Yep.
Perfect. I would just say, on a passing note, that this would be Exhibit A for a February bill. Right?
So therefore, we should pass it. Good, yeah.
Here, the classic technical fix, if you will. And again, as Rep. Leininger said, this is an issue that was brought to our attention originally at a roundtable discussion we had with Multnomah County superintendents a few weeks ago, where you know, they had concerns not about the content, not about the intent of the bill, but just the implementation of it. That's really all that's in play here. And I've since heard from my own superintendent and other superintendents the same kinds of concerns. So this is just simply to delay the implementation a short time, let ODE put in place some rules that will allow people to understand how to do this and what credit can they get for programs that they may already have in place. Would those count, or do we have to create four new sections, you know, that can be delivered four times a year, professional training? Maybe they already have people that have been trained in some other type of intervention techniques. Would those be acceptable and so forth? The bill's not real specific about that. So it's just trying to put some flesh on the bones a bit so that folks at the local level understand how to successfully implement it, because it's a very, very important issue, as I think we all agree. So that's the legislative intent. It's not to water down or dilute the intent of the bill at all. It's just to make it implementable in a way that can be, we can roll out then for students across the, you know, all 196 school districts we have in the state of Oregon. So that really is it in a nutshell. And we do have a superintendent here who can speak from firsthand knowledge about some of his concerns.
So there's no policy change that's a date change?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Sir?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Terry Brandon. I'm the superintendent of Riverdale School District, and I'm kind of speaking for the Multnomah County superintendents. We had a legislative meeting, and we brought this issue up. Frankly, it was one, I think, that caught most of us by surprise. We didn't really know it was in the works, and as I searched the history, it looked like it happened pretty quickly. I understand the implementation of Aaron's Law is an important thing happening across the nation, and we 100% support that. That's an important part of this of the tools that we have. But a number of questions come up, and one of the big ones that came out of my district was when you put a classroom teacher involved into instruction, that's going to create kind of an unresolved situation to come forward in the classroom. That teacher's not trained to do that. That becomes a therapeutic situation, and if there's a disclosure of a situation, that is very important. What happens in those first adult response to what happens is extremely important. I've dealt with child abuse situations over a number of years, and I know that we are mandatory reporters, and we do that very well. However, it takes great training to deal with a student who's in that crisis at that time and not make it worse. There's some of the issues if that disclosure happens in a full classroom. You've then exposing all the other children to that, plus they're reliving their situation. So we need guidance, and I think we need training on it. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that just came up to this was, wow, this is something that we really need a good work group to sit down for a period of time and find out what's the best way to do this. These are all great things to do, and we just need a little bit of time to implement it.
July 1, 2016. Okay, thank you. Go ahead, and then we'll open it up for questions.
Thank you. I just wanted to note that we consulted with the Oregon Department of Education in drafting the bill, and they feel it addresses concerns that they've heard in the field during the rulemaking on the original bill.
Okay, fine. Thank you. Representative Springer had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So at this currently, you need to give the report or implement by July 31st or something?
Actually, it was last July.
It was last July. Mm-hmm. Okay. So this would actually be a bill that extends a deadline, but has an emergency clause that actually maybe makes sense. You're extending a deadline and you're declaring an emergency.
It is an emergency.
That is a bit ironic.
Well said.
And that's the procedure.
Half the
yes.
Bill?
That's a third. That's one whole section of the three sections.
That's
even better. Okay, any other questions of this panel? Okay, thank you so very much. Okay, with that, I close the public hearing on House Bill 4099, and I open up a work session on House Bills 4022. Richard, if you could give us a summary of it again.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The committee heard House Bill 4022 on Monday. It exempts a retired member of PERS from limitations on reemployment by a public employer if the member is reemployed as a speech-language pathologist or speech-language pathology assistant. And that exemption would expire January 2nd, 2026.
Okay, thank you.
Chair Doherty, I move House Bill 4022 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Frederick moves House Bill 4022 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Okay, seeing none, is there any objection? Okay, seeing none. Michael, could you read the roll, please?
Representative Moretta.
Aye.
Representative Mack.
Aye.
Representative McLean.
Aye.
Representative
Lusa. Aye.
Representative Reardon.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick.
Aye.
Vice Chair Springer.
Aye.
Chair Doherty.
Aye. Okay, with that...
I'd also like to cast my vote. Aye.
Oh.
We skipped Representative Wilson.
Oh!
Representative Wilson, I apologize.
Aye. No, we're okay. Good.
Now with that, the motion passes.
Now it's unanimous.
Assign a measure, I believe. Is this Representative Buckley's bill?
Wants to vote.
We were assigning a carrier and...
Be willing.
That was our bill.
Pardon? Oh, it's a committee bill. Okay, Representative Springer will carry the bill. Thank you very much. Okay, with that, I close the work session on House Bill 4022, and I open up a work session on House Bill 4023.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 4023 considers certain individuals to be residents of a school district in which they attend school, even if their legal residences change due to boundary change. The committee heard this on Monday. It takes effect July 1, 2016.
And this was the Beaverton-Hillsboro issue. Okay, is there any discussion?
Briefly.
Just to clarify, yes. And you just started to go there, or partway there. This is truly a fix of an issue with boundaries. This isn't about open enrollment. This is not about tightening boundaries. This is about fixing a handful of kids that really just got lost.
Yes, and I think at this point it was 24. So we passed the bill last session, and this was the fix that they found out that they needed to do. So it's truly a fix. Just deals with Hillsboro, Beaverton boundaries.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Is there any objection?
Need a motion.
Pardon? Oh, Representative Frederick.
Chair Doherty, I move House Bill 4023 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Frederick moves House Bill 4023 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion now? Okay. Is there any objection? Oh, discussion?
Well, I just want to be clear that I think that both school districts, Beaverton and Hillsboro, are doing some things that are helping them spend their money and build schools in the right places. When you've got school districts that have boundaries, you've got to talk together and make sure that you're making sense to both communities. And then the second thing that it really does is for families, and 24 or 26 kids are actually being allowed to finish in a school that they started. Only it's not a grandfathering, it's just these 24 to 26 children are going to be able to continue an education that they appreciate and are used to and want to continue until graduation.
Okay, thank you. Any other discussion? Hey, is there any objection? Okay, seeing none. Michael, could you call the roll, please?
Representative
Beretta. Aye.
Representative Mack?
Aye.
Representative McLean?
Aye.
Representative Lusso?
Aye.
Representative Reardon?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick?
Yes.
Vice Chair Springer?
Aye.
And Chair Doherty?
Aye. Okay, with that, motion passes. We have a carrier on this one? It's a committee bill. Is there anyone on the committee that would like to carry this bill? Anyone who worked in Hillsboro?
I could do it.
Representative McLean, would you like to carry this bill?
I'd be happy to do it.
Okay, thank you. Representative McLean. Okay, with that, I close the public hearing on close the work session on House Bill 4023, and I open up a work session on House Bill...
No, you just...
Huh? Oh, we're done?
Carried over.
Okay.
You're going to carry that over.
Okay, we don't do that. Gavel goes away. Okay, any other things for the good of the order? Okay, thank you very much. We are adjourned. Okay, thank you very much. We are adjourned.